Welcome to the Smarter Building Materials Marketing Podcast, helping you find better ways to grow leads, sales, and outperform your competition.
All right, everybody, welcome to Smarter Building Materials Marketing, where we believe your online presence should be your best salesperson. I am Zach Williams alongside my co-host, Beth Popnikolov. And today we're talking about trends, threats, and opportunities. It's going to be an awesome show. With that, Beth, do you want to introduce our guest?
I do. I'm really excited for our guest today because he's one of my go-tos when we've got questions about what's happening in the market or weird things are going on or people are buying people, companies are buying companies. So I'd love to welcome to the show Craig Webb. He is the president of Webb Analytics and one of my favorite LinkedIn follows with a great newsletter. Craig, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. This is a mutual honor society because I've really enjoyed following you folks for quite a while too.
Craig, we're going to dive into many things today, but before we get started, can you take a few minutes, introduce yourself to our listeners and introduce Webb Analytics as well?
I come to the world as a reporter. I've been a reporter and a collector of information for more than 50 years now, back to the days when I interviewed Miss Michiana Mobile Home and Travel Trailer Show in high school. And I worked for United Press International, The Wall Street Journal, and a number of other publications before I got into business writing. And 18 years ago, I became editor of one of the biggest and certainly the most honored magazines for lumberyards and building material dealers. It was called Pro Sales. It barely exists now, and I left it about 6 years ago when journalism was leaving me and created Webb Analytics. But I'm still largely about the same thing, which is to find out what's happening in the industry, look for those incoming missiles that dealers don't have any time to think about or notice, and alert them to them and help them figure out ways to keep from being decimated.
That should be like underneath your title is like keeping you from being decimated. Speaking of which, can you give me an example of that? Like, can I just put you on the spot? Like, what is something like you've seen the last, I don't know, either currently or in the past year or two, you're like, this is something that is a huge threat or did actually decimate somebody, just so we can get some context about what you're talking about there.
Two things. The most classic was the arrival of Home Depot and the whole business concept. The reason why Pro Sales was called Pro Sales was that the idea of selling primarily to professional builders was a really strange idea. We were sort of like the Rolling Stone of our day because everybody else was worrying about home centers and home channels. And as it turned out, it was the pro dealer who survived. Probably the second thing that decimated the business was what happened right about the time I arrived in 2006. I remember saying to my boss, you know, I hear that there's going to be a downturn in housing. And he said, don't worry, housing always leads the way out of the recession. And business went down 75%. You know, that's not pulling in your belt. That's Highlander. Only one of us will survive. So those were the kinds of things that were happening. With regard to openings and closures and acquisitions, those have been going on quite steadily for a pretty long time and reflect just a trend that continues but never seems to stop.
Is there anything on the horizon, Craig, you see right now that you're like, this is a huge threat for the market that a lot of people are not paying attention to?
Once upon a time, a dealer sold everything you needed to build a house, from the foundation to the ceiling. And then you had the arrival of roofing companies, you had the arrival of drywall companies and specialists. And, you know, you can still go out into the country and basically that dealer is still selling you everything that it takes. But when you're talking about other places, some of these profits that you were getting from roofing or from other places just aren't there anymore. The largest challenge I think that dealers have today is that they are sort of misnamed. There's a famous predecessor before me named Greg Brooks who said that lumberyards should stop calling themselves Joe's Lumberyard and should change their name to Joe's Construction Services. Because in many ways, they actually are a real partner with the builder. There are dealers who actually have offices in the builder's main office because they are seen as being that much a part of the construction process. And when you take the amount of money that's going into truss manufacturing, value-added services, installing things, dealers are far more than just people who bring the product into the town and drop it onto a rack for people to buy. Artificial intelligence is definitely going to change the game. But there are people out there who are working on ways, for example, to price products based on the absolute individual. So if you have 10,000 customers and 30,000 SKUs, you can have 30 million different prices. And you can get several more percentage points. Also, in terms of purchasing, there are people who are using artificial intelligence to combine the data that the dealer has to really say, how much wood do you really need? How many gigas do you need in your hardware department, really, in order to meet the customer's needs? And if you need maybe 10% less, that's extra money that you can make. The construction supply business has always been a low profit business, 3% net frequently. Net profit is about all it is. And consequently, you've got to figure out in the future how you're going to get that up. And that's going to be one of the biggest challenges. Lumber prices are going down. And if that's where your money has been coming from, you ain't going to have as much.
Zach, you talked a lot about, you were at a builder panel in 2020, 2021, where they were talking about the cost of lumber and how builders were, for the first time, making more margin on the homes that they were building, which from a consumer standpoint, that's the largest purchase you're likely ever going to make in your life. And so you're like, builders must just be rolling in it. And then you hear things like 3% margin, 5% margin. You know, if you get 9% margin as a home builder, you're like, you've done some real witchcraft to make that happen. You heard builders say, Zach, when lumber prices go down, we're not lowering prices. Prices are going down. Greg, how are you seeing that flesh out? Is that true?
Well, lumber prices have gone down to about the level they were in 2019. They actually dropped further for a while, but now they're at that 2019 level. Several things. The first is that builders are building smaller houses. And if you build a smaller house, you don't need as much wood. You don't need as many windows. You don't need as many other things. The build-to-rent phenomenon also factors in there because those are simpler designs, longer-lasting products, usually not upscale. You don't get upscale faucets in a build-to-rent house. So you have those factors going in. The third, though, is in many ways, as I said, incorporating the dealer to help solve your problems, having them build a truss for you, having them install the windows and doors. The funny thing about a builder is that I get the feeling that with a lot of builders, building a house is actually the last thing they want to do. They want to buy the land. They want to come up with a concept, you know, Del Boca Vista or whatever, and they go along. But, you know, building a house is where the problems happen. I mean, that's where the warranty gets attacked. So if you can keep the house upright enough that it will last through the 1-year warranty, that's all you care about because you're working on the next Del Boca Vista at the time. Consequently, the faster and quicker and with less pain that you can build a house, the better off you are. And frequently, if you can't trust the framer to put in a window, you might have to go to a dealer to put in the window just to protect yourself against a warranty claim later on.
Coming out of IBS, it was a very large show. Walking the whole entire thing was, I think, the most challenging I've ever had. When you walked that show, like, what are the things that stood out to you?
A couple of things came back to me. One was the relative optimism that people had, the belief that things were getting better. You know, there have been big themes over time. I remember about 15 years, every single vendor talked about their green message and how they were great. Other times, they'll talk about the relative efficiency of what they do. This time, I got the feeling that there was more selling of newer concepts, electronic concepts frequently, such as automated takeoffs, by using companies like Builders First Source's Paradigm software, the greater use of more variety. It wasn't just the Chinese who were there. The Germans had their own booth. The Polish had their own booth. So there's more desire to get things from more countries, including wood from Europe too. So those things all factored in. And people didn't seem to stint on building big booths. The size of the booths really impressed me too.
I'd like to get your take on this. One thing I thought stood out to me was the amount of manufacturers specifically or people that had a booth that were not just pushing the product, but they're pushing a service alongside of it. Meaning, yeah, like, hey, here's how we're going to make your business more efficient. Here's a tool we've rolled out. Here's an XYZ thing that we're doing that no one else has. Because I think what the market feels is, hey, our products are important, but we have to continue to create a moat beyond our product because the inroads into our market have increased. And so in order for us to supply the demand that the market has, we have to do more than just give them a product. We have to fully integrate with our customers, you know, and how they do business. I've been saying this for like a year or two now, like the product is becoming more and more the back end, and the service and the things alongside are actually the front end of these brands.
No, I think if any manufacturer had their way, they would want a customer for life. And if I have a service that basically binds them into my software, my website or whatever that keeps them going, that's one way that you sort of lock them in, just like Apple does or Google does or whatever. But at the same time, these services frequently can be super valuable. I brought up earlier how Builders FirstSource has a technology company called Paradigm that offers software that helps you design the house. And that actually helps you figure out how many materials you need. But a big part of that also is coming back to the builder and saying, do you realize that if you just did your spacing a little bit different or you used a slightly different product, you could actually cut the price of your house? Or equally important, do you realize that the design that you have given us right now, as currently designed, will cause the house to fall in? Architects don't really care about whether the house falls in. That's the engineer's problem, you know? Well, a lot of these small builders don't have their own structural engineers, and they don't realize how these things have changed. In other words, it's the service that Builders FirstSource's Paradigm software is providing that's as valuable as the actual materials they're providing.
Who else stood out to you? Like when you walked the floor, who were like, okay, these guys are really trying to push the market?
Well, I was interested in how the siding companies are continuing to come up with new versions of siding that you hadn't thought of, made out of things that you hadn't thought of, whether the product is stuff made out of rice hulls or other things. I didn't see all that much innovative at IBS compared with some other shows like Greenbuild. Like, for example, at Greenbuild, they're using switchgrass and grasses to produce an OSB equivalent that's actually more water resistant than OSB. I think what they really were going for was just trying to grab onto what they see as a moving train and try to sell just as much as they can with what they have already.
I think saying how much people leaned into options this year is a great way to say it. It's always the place to launch a new product if you have new. In reflection, though, I would agree, not a ton of innovation, but a lot of like, do you have this problem? We have a solution for that. We have a solution for that. We have a solution for that. Also, it comes in 17 colors. Volume was the name of the game. And typically when we see that, what it tells you is you haven't figured out what's the one thing that you have or that your customer needs. Craig, I'd love your opinion on this. I wonder if that's partly or in any way due to how much has changed. And we can feel this settling that's happening.
I know where you're heading. And the answer is that we have too dire a need to build houses to really worry about innovation, in a sense, in this way. Volume, in many ways, is the name of the game because one of the people who spoke at the event, there was a finance company called Stifel that basically estimated that we're about 3.4 million houses short of what we need to be. I've seen other beliefs that it's higher than that, but that's their most recent estimate. And the New York Times just had a story about how people who are 30 and 31 years old are basically the peak of the millennial generation. And so one reason why we've got so many people desperate for so much housing is that by the time you get to be 30 or 31, you're probably married. You're probably thinking about that first child. You may have had that first child by the time you're 31. Certainly different than my age. You know, when I was a boomer, you got married when you were 25. Now it's, you know, a few years later. Consequently, there's huge demand in part because there's this bulge going through. There was another story I just read today that said even 7% mortgages aren't scaring people now.
If you look at inventory right now compared to a year ago, you're seeing more houses on the market, which means people are going, I guess this is like, I just got to be okay with this.
Yeah, there's two things happening there. One is people who thought they could hang around for a while and wait, have you realized that, no, we're not going to get down to 3% mortgages again very soon. And so life happens, you know, babies get born, parents die, new jobs arrive. And so you just got to move. The second is that there's actually a belief that we're going to see what you might almost call a COVID comeback in that if we had a lot of remodeling going on right when COVID happened, when people were forced to work at home and they suddenly decided, I need a bigger deck, you know, I need a better room. There was a whole other group of people that didn't do anything because the mortgages were going up and they decided, well, the wealthier people in that cohort are now at that point where they're saying, oh, it looks like I'm going to stay here. I'm going to make this, you know, my forever home. So I'm going to fix it up the way I want. So let's talk about, you know, new countertops or that sort of thing.
It's interesting you say it because I went to an event for a dealer earlier this week and I was speaking at the event and someone asked me about that specifically. Hey, what do you think is going to happen with R&R versus new construction? And I tend to think that there's going to be a pretty big boom around R&R simply because you've got people that bought a house during COVID and the vast majority of people that bought a house during COVID made concessions around it. And then you have people that are entering in homes and the affordability issue that's happening. They're going, okay, I got to buy a house that's maybe not exactly how I want it, but I can't afford the house exactly that I want. So I need to go down. So let me fix up the home as I get into it. So I'm going to get in a home that has potential, or I bought a house during COVID or whatever it might be. And so there's a very strong argument that R&R is going to just go through the roof for the next 5 to 10 years.
Zonda has said that they've done some surveys that indicate there are a lot of people who bought a house and are unhappy with it, and they've just been waiting around. Also, there's greater willingness to not get exactly the house you want because you can only afford so much. In one of my most recent video presentations about the state of the economy, I do a couple of these for various groups. I have a picture of a dog staring out a window, just waiting for good times to come, you know, the man with the bone, the man with the kibble or whatever. And I think that's where we are right now in the construction and repair and remodeling economy. We're like that dog just waiting anxiously for good times to come. And we think that those good times will come in the form of the Federal Reserve when they lower interest rates and Katie barred the door after that. And so, you know, when is that going to happen?
What do you think? Do you agree with that?
It's funny, the greater belief now that it's going to happen in the second half of the year, in part because housing is its own worst enemy with regard to lowering the inflation rate. 45% of the consumer price index is housing related, rents, mortgages, repairs on housing. A huge percentage of builders are planning to raise their prices this year. So rents are only stabilizing. There is this belief that rents will go down once a whole bunch of multifamily is supposed to come in soon, but that hasn't happened yet.
And at the NAHB presentation this year, they specifically said, we've all been waiting for the multi-housing slowdown and it's here. People started talking about that at COVID of like, no one's ever going to live in an apartment again. Everybody wants land.
Well, permits are down in January, year over year, about 19%. Single family permits are up 41%. And theoretically, that's a good thing for building material dealers and suppliers and manufacturers, because a single family house is about 2.5 times bigger than a multifamily house. So theoretically, those are good things, although the house is shrinking a little bit. Yes, there will be a general reduction in rents. But as you know, the head of the NAHB said, you know, the first 10 pounds you take off are a lot easier than the next 10 pounds you take off. And the Fed getting down to 3.2%, that's worked. But to get to 2%, that's a lot harder. And as long as home builders keep raising their prices, that's going to cause a step back.
We started talking about trends, threats, and opportunities. Dealer's choice. Before we wrap, give us a trend, threat, or opportunity you think our listeners need to know about.
Inside my own community, which is the dealer community, the big challenge this year is going to be operational. In one of my presentations, I lead off with a picture of a sign at the Washington Nationals baseball spring training this year, which says, nobody cares how hard you throw ball four. You may be a whiz, but if you're going to walk the guy, we don't care if the pitch came in at 105 miles an hour. In other words, how you execute really is going to be a big thing this year. So I think that's the number one trend. I'm seeing a lot of dealers realizing that lumber is not going to be a supporting device. They've got to figure out how to make as much money as possible. A threat is frequently in the form of the government, a new code, a new regulation, and things like that. Although actually we're seeing governors and the president change their mind, wanting to provide more help for affordable housing. You know, how long that lasts, we shall see. Opportunities, I think the biggest thing in my community is for the building material dealer to be an even greater part of the whole building process. Like I said earlier, they should stop calling themselves Joe's Lumber. They should call themselves Joe's Construction Services. I would love to see dealers actually start selling themselves on a time and materials basis, but you know, it's going to take a while. In your world, and by your world, I'm talking about the product manufacturer and the person trying to sell the product. I would recommend that you start taking a closer look at where your product is being sold. First, because those places are being acquired by other companies, and you may have an absolutely great store in Perth Amboy, New Jersey, which is just doing raging business in your area, and they get bought by somebody else who doesn't want to carry your product. So just becoming aware of those things matter. The second is, and this actually happened at one of your events 2 years ago, one of your vendors said that they had a where to find us tag on their website. And with that, they were providing leads to the local building material dealer to call up and say, hey, you know, I understand you're interested in such and such window. And it turned out the dealer wasn't doing anything. And so they got really angry. The trouble with the vendor was they didn't know who else they could go to who was in the area who could sell that product for them to change where they were sending their leads. So being aware of where the products are and how the products are being sold matters. It also factors in with certain salespeople. I know vendors have told me, we don't have any trouble in Orlando because we know a guy down in Orlando who is just selling our product left and right. He retires, he gets hired by somebody else, and now he's selling the competitor's product. So just being aware of all those things, I think, from a manufacturer point of view, really matter.
Craig, man, thank you so much for coming to the show. What's the best way for someone to get in touch with you and also subscribe to your newsletter?
Well, my hot news is on LinkedIn. I have more than 15,000 followers from around the world. And so if you go just to LinkedIn for Craig Webb, you'll see me. My website is web-analytics, and that's web with two B's -analytics.com. There you can subscribe. You can see my stories. You also can download my reports and all that stuff. It's all free. And so that's an advantage for you guys.
Craig, thank you again for coming on the show. And for our listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, check us out at venvio.com/podcast to subscribe and get more. Until next time, I'm Zach Williams alongside Beth Popnikolov. Thanks, everybody.